We have been taught for all of our lives, all our years, involve yourselves in finding out what's going on with other people. Stop talking about yourself. This morning is awkward. They're asking me to talk about myself and my life. And often we find ourselves doing that, but we shouldn't. We should be involving ourselves with others. My spiritual pilgrimage. Where do you start? Where do you stop? There'll be a lot of gaps in this presentation this morning. My name is Jerry Stalsus, and I live in Honeypath, South Carolina, part of the Shiloh congregation. My mother, I'll tell you this to start with, my mother passed away at the age of 57 years, 10 months, and 14 days. She died on June 14th, and it was 14 days until my 14th birthday. My oldest grandchild is currently 14. My oldest grandson was born on June 14th. And currently, we have 14 grandchildren. There's more to that story, but I'll stop with that. There's more 14s in that number. But it's amazing how God can put, he's a God of numbers. Life has causes and effects. We all have a story, and the more I know of your story, the more I can understand why you act the way you do and why you don't act the way you don't act. What do I do with my experience, and how do I learn from it, and how can my experience benefit others? A lot of what happens is out of my control. Some of what happens is in my control. Some of what happens in my life is a result or a reaction to what has happened with the circumstances in my life. Do we allow the things in our lives, the things in my life, to allow to build me or to tear me down, to make me bitter or to make me better? Those are a lot of questions that I'm not going to answer all this morning at all. Circumstances that my life consisted of. I was the youngest of 10. There was 5 boys and 5 girls. My oldest brother is 20 years my senior. My parents were raised Amish, and they joined a Beachy church approximately 10 years before I was born. My dad was an extremely hard worker. He loved us. He loved me, I know. But I don't remember hearing it. And often I hear that from each one of y'all as you share your story, that we didn't hear that. Brother J. Mark shared that last night. We know our parents loved us, but we didn't hear it. My mother was a good and a godly mother. She provided for her family and was very concerned for her family. My dad grew up Amish. My dad had a smoking habit that he developed when he was in part of the Amish in Pennsylvania. I think he hated that he had that habit. But it was an addiction. He hated it. But he hid it, but he tried to hide it. When they joined the Beachy Church, it was my understanding that my mother would have loved to be a part of the conservative, Hartville Conservative Mennonite Church in Hartville, Ohio, where I grew up. But they did not allow smoking at that church. In the Beachy Church, as it's my understanding, at that point, they had also frowned on it, but their ideology was velas veniha maha, meaning let's make it less. I think they understood where these men were coming from in what was happening in the Amish circles and people leaving these Amish circles, and this was a part of what was going on. But still, my dad hid his smoking habit. I was a short, round kid. I thought my dad was ashamed of me because I hardly ever got to go with him when he went to town. When he went somewhere, it was like, well, it's not going to work this time. I didn't go. I was the youngest of 10, so I didn't go on the jobs with him. I thought he was ashamed of me. Many, many years later, I realized, no, this was his opportunity to smoke a cigarette away from his family. It had nothing to do with him being ashamed of me, but I didn't know that. God was working. In my life, I remember thinking as a 9 or 10 year old boy that if I would ever be fortunate enough to get married, that if I'd ever be fortunate enough to have children, I would not try to make my family think I'm something that I am not. What you see is what you get. I don't know why I thought that. I was too young to have any kind of wisdom like that. That was God. I credit that. That had to be God working even in that situation. I don't remember my home life as being really strange, because for each one of us, the home life we grew up in, that is normal for us because it's what we grew up in. But as my dad, I knew he smoked and I knew he hid it, but I never called him out on it, and I didn't feel like I should, or I ever felt like it was my response. It wasn't a thought process to call him out on it, but it was just how it was. I was the youngest of 10. I watched my older brothers, who, 3 of them, were not believers. They were not Christians, and they were not living a life at all that represented anything godly. And I think in my subconscious mind, I admired my brothers, but then as I was looking at them, in my subconscious mind, I believe it was, again, God working and thinking, this ain't working out real well for them, because their life really was pretty stinky sometimes, maybe a lot of times. And again, I think God used my experiences in that to say, this is not something that I want. At the age of about 54 or 55 years old, my mother developed ovarian cancer. I remember the night we found out she was in the hospital. That night that we found out that mother had cancer, she was going to die. That night was harder than the actual death of my mother. I remember sitting on the way home from the hospital in the back of my brother's 1974 white Dodge van that was like a work van with no seats, sitting behind the driver's seat, and he was driving, and my next older sister was sitting somewhere on the other side. We were crying our guts out. We were there all together, but we were all alone. We had no idea how to talk through this thing. What do you say? Mom's gonna die. This year, it will be 47 years that my mother has passed. I look at you brothers out there and that you still have your mother in around my age, and I'm like, wow, what would that be like? What would that be like to be able to call mom or to go visit mom? All I'm saying is that enjoy your parents, enjoy your mother while you have them. The next several years were kind of a blur. Like I said, mother passed away at 57 years, 10 months, and 14 days, which was 14 days before my 14th birthday. 1975 was the year she passed. Her dying wish was for the salvation of her children. I graduated a 2-room Amish school in 8th grade that spring before she passed away. And that summer and in that fall, I was registered into Hartville Christian School for the 9th grade. This little boy did not want to go to 9th grade anywhere. But one of mom's things was, which was that maybe I should stay in school because she was going to be passing away and I just need to be in school. That was not a good year. That was not a good year for me. It was not a good year for my teachers. It was not a good year for Brother Uri Sharp, who was the school principal. I would end up in the principal's office, and I would talk him out of whooping me with that big paddle. I was so proud of myself because I was like, I really did great on this. Years later, I look back and I'm like, you know what? I was not that great at this. But I firmly believe that Brother Yuri Sharp got me in his office and he looked at me and he talked to me. And I think he probably would have wanted to slap me just as soon as look at me. But he had to realize there was this 14-year-old little kid who lost his mother and he's being a real jerk. And it was God's grace, even through that. It was his Yuri Sharp's mercy that prevented some of those things from happening, which I probably should have had them. I made horrible grades. That following spring, we had auction and we moved to South Carolina. I had three sisters currently living in South Carolina at that time already. But in Ohio, I had friends that were not Christians. God worked. God moved. We moved to South Carolina. I developed and had new friends in the Beachy churches where we attended there with my dad. I developed new friends, and they were good guys. One night, I guess I was probably maybe 16 years old. We got done eating supper. And at that point, it was just my dad and myself. Dad cooked, I ate, and he did the dishes. We always had our routine. I can take you to the spot where I leaned back in my chair after we ate, and I was like, I think I'm going to go out and get drunk tonight. I had never drank in my life. My dad was a hard man. But I never remember him spanking me. My mother did. But I can still see that picture of him sitting across the table from me and looking at me. And he just looked at me and he softly said, "Jerry, I hope you never go out and get drunk." And he had tears in his eyes. I'm not saying that's how you should parent. I'm saying what he did at that point was the best way to parent there could be at that point, at that time. I am convinced that if I would have been with friends, and I had some at that point, even that, I'm not sure. But I was never around alcohol. But I am convinced if I would have been with friends or people who'd have had alcohol and have been drinking alcohol, you could not have forced a drop down my throat if you'd have held me down. I would not have accepted it. Because I would have went back to what my dad said to me at the table. I could not do that to my father. I will also say at this point that my dad was a very private man. If you'd ask him what something cost when I was a little kid, even in years growing up, he would not tell you because, like, it's either don't worry about it or it's paid for. But financially, we struggled. And then as time went on, some of that came out in my life. But let me move on. I developed new friends in South Carolina, like I said, and then around the age of 15, I accepted the Lord as my Savior. I don't know the date, and I struggle when I hear some of y'all saying that you know that on this particular day, you gave your heart to the Lord. And I wish I would have that, but I don't. But I have in times past and recommitted myself, Lord. And that's one thing I've done with my children and others when they give their heart to the Lord, like, take your Bible, write it in your Bible, the date, and then you can turn back to it when you ever have any doubts and say, I know this was the day. I started working for my brother-in-law in a cabinet shop at 17. And by the time I was 20, I took over the business because he was going on a mail route full-time and wasn't going to do it. I took over the business in March, and I married my wife, Diane, in April. That was a busy year. As life went on, I went to a wedding, and here, this is, and again, I'm not quite sure of the time frame, but again, it has to do with a person. And this would have been the former bishop at the Beachy Church where I was in Ohio. I went to a wedding, and here he was there. I shook his hand. We greeted. And he looked at me, and he said, "Jerry." And he looked at me, and he was like, "My, my. The Lord still does work miracles." Yeah, but he wasn't being funny. He was serious about this. And I was not a bad boy. I was just a very nixnutsy, I guess. If you understand, just a very, I was naughty as a kid. But that spoke loud. I still remember that 30 years later, 35, whatever it was. That meant something to me, of this older preacher, that he thought I was something. He acknowledges the change in my life. That was encouraging. Like I say, I married Diane in April of 1982. I got a good spouse. An excellent spouse. I did not have a 20-page criteria checklist of what a woman should consist of, that if she's going to qualify to be my wife. I didn't know what I was looking for even. But somehow I was able to snag Diane Hershberger and turn her into a Stahlsfuss. The only thing I can tell you, that God looks out for those less fortunate. And I say that in saying that he looks out for the widows. He looks out for the orphans. And I was, in a sense, an orphan who had lost his mother at a young age when I still needed my mother. Seriously, who doesn't at the age of 13? 40 years is coming up this April that we've been married, and 5 children later, and 14 grandchildren. I am a blessed, blessed man. One day, it was in the middle of the week, we lived here, my cabinet shop was here, and my dad lived in a single wide trailer that we had for him on the other side of the shop, so that we were all in the same yard there. I went out in the shop, and I seen, as I was going out there, that there was a car with out-of-state license plates. I assume they came to visit my dad. I walked in the shop door, opened the shop door, and walked in. It must have been on a Saturday because the guys weren't working. And I heard voices. And I stopped and I listened. And I heard my dad saying, "Yeah, Jerry, he did this, and Jerry, he does this, and this is, and Jerry did this, and Jerry." And I'm like, he's talking about me. He thinks I'm something. And I just stood there and I listened. My dad thought I was something. I learned from that, like, how can I do this better with my children? And I've tried. I know I haven't gotten it right always, and none of us do. Time went on. My dad he'd be around, and he loved being around me. But he'd come out in the shop, he'd hang around when there'd be customers, and as he got older, his sense of smell wasn't great, but he would also not bathe like he should. That's just the way it was. He would come to in the office, and he would look at things, maybe like an invoice, and it would tick me off. Because it's like, my feeling was, it's none of your business. But he just glanced at it and put it down. He would be sitting there when a customer would come in to look at cabinets in the showroom. And I always thought, man, I wish he would just leave, because I never said anything to him about that, though. I wouldn't have thought of saying anything. But I struggled with bitterness, big time. Even to the point, I'm ashamed to say, that I was like, I wonder how long he's even going to live yet. the Lord was working on me. One day, he convicted me to the point to where, like, I confessed it as sin before God. I said, I want no part of that. I decided with that confession, with that resolve, that I don't care what my dad does to me, who my dad is going to be, I do not care. I will take care of him till the day he dies. He is my dad. Now when customers came into the showroom, my dad would be sitting there. We called him Pappy. I would introduce myself as you should. I'd say, I'm Jerry, and good to meet y'all. And my dad would say, and I'd say, and this is my dad. And he is the meanest, baddest thing on the planet. And I said, he takes care of everyone in this shop and keeps us all straight. And they laughed. And then Pappy, he was like, oh, you're crazy. You know what I learned, brothers and sisters? I don't have to apologize for anybody. I don't have to apologize for my parents. I don't have to apologize for old people. Because everybody deals with old people. Somebody's having to deal with me. And we'll continue if life continues. My dad passed away in April of 1999. My confession to God, and I never told it to my dad, but in a matter of 2 weeks or so, I seen a marked difference on my dad's face, and that he was a much happier person. Dad noticed that something was different about his youngest son. The regrets that I would have if I would not have done that. Today, the regret that I live with my dad is that I didn't take him to Jake's Diner just several more times before he passed away for lunch. But that's not a regret. We can all look back and think, there's more things I could have done. But how thankful I am to God that I had done this thing of making it right. And we used to have him over for meals several times a week. The last night that we fed him, my son had cooked pork chops, he ate. I would always, after we eat, I'd always have coffee. I'd serve coffee, and I'd say, Pap, you want a cup of coffee? And I'd already have it in my hand, and he'd like, no. I'd set it down, and he'd drink it. That last night, we ate. I came, I had coffee. I said, Pap, you want some coffee? He looked up at me and said, yeah. That was special. Don't know what it means, but it was special. He drove out the lane that evening. They found him the next morning, slumped over of a heart attack. His coffee was still warm. He was fixing to put his shoes on and make his breakfast. What a good way to go. My mother passed away of cancer. My children were born in South Carolina. My dad, I would always say, when each one put, Pap, gonna come to the hospital? Nope, I will not go in the hospital. He said, I'll see him when he come home. It made such an impact on him when my mother was sick, and they went to Texas, they went to Mexico, they went to Georgia, they went to Timbuktu to try to figure out a cure for this cancer, and it didn't work. Dad was not going to go into a hospital. I understand that. My children loved their grandpa. The one thing I noticed also in my children loving their grandpa, he would come over there, and they would just pile on his lap, and he would sit there and talk to them. He would go with us on trips to Ohio, to Pennsylvania to visit family. And I had told Diane and the children, Diane was never a problem with that. But I said, we will never say anything to Pappy about that he should take a shower before he gets on the bus, on the van with us. I said, so what if it's a little bit of body odor? I don't care. We can put up with that. And you know what I found out with my children? Is that if Dad's okay with it, there's not a problem. My attitude reflects so greatly to my children. It's huge. Way more is caught than is taught. We know that. My message is, everyone, take care of your parents, no matter what. I can still take you to the exact spot by the shop where I spoke to Diane's dad several years, number of years after my dad passed away. I told him, I said, Joe, you have got 6 children, and they're all believers. But I want you to know, and I want you to have heard it from my lips, that if every one of the rest of your children abandon you, Diane and I will never abandon you. We will take care of you if we have to by ourselves. Brothers and sisters, that changed our relationship with him. He looked at me and he's like, thank you. We know that our parents, we know that those that in relationship with us, we know that they know how we feel. We know that they know we'll take care. We know that they will do. But do you verbalize it? Have you verbalized it? And I would encourage each one of you, do that. It means so much for them to hear that. Because as we get older, people get unsure. They start doubting, really. But when they hear those that they love and those that they know will take care of them, they hear them verbalizing it, it's special. Fast forward to 1995 on a different note. 9 families plus our family left Whispering Pines Mennonite Church and we started Shiloh Mennonite Church. For 3 years, we were without a pastor, and that was a nice honeymoon, but yet it was frustrating because people say, you don't have a preacher yet. No, we don't have a preacher. You don't? No. I was not ordained at that point, of course. And we were kind of, we left a church that was there, and it you know how it can be when you have leave one church and start another one. It can be, there can be issues, or it can be a struggle. Brother Mervyn Wangard, who is here today, is responsible for Gary Troyer having been our first pastor at Shiloh Mennonite Church. Gary Troyer did not know that there was a Mennonite church in South Carolina. Him and Ruth went up to United Covenant, where Bob Webb and Mervyn were serving. And they were considering moving there from New Mexico. Mervyn told Brother Gary, you know, we'd love to have you here, because he knew Gary. But he said, there is a little church down in Due West, South Carolina, that does not have a pastor. And they sure need one. Gary came down and we met with him on a Friday. And he consented to moving there and becoming our pastor. Our church was a charter BMA church. I remember going to BMA functions just like we have here. As a new pastor, I was ordained in 1999 as a deacon. But I would come to the functions, and invariably, when I would walk through that door, the person who's at that door was no one else but Gary Troyer. And he welcomed me in and took me by the hand, as it were, and showed me around, because I was a new preacher. I didn't know where to go. But the warmth and the love that I felt him doing that was incredible. Gary was a huge, huge mentor to me. I have learned so much from him. Gary had said, I remember him saying that, I'm not going to grow old being a pastor at Shiloh. Because Gary was a church planter and a missionary. What he meant was, he'll help us get started, but then we're going to transition this. He talked about, in 5 years, we're going to transition. In 2008, I was put in as senior pastor. My idea was like, wait a minute. This is not what we talk about. This is a year early. This is not our agreement. But that happened, and I thank God that it did. Little did I know. Little did anyone know. That 1 year later, Brother Gary Troyer would pass away of cancer. 58 years old. 12 days from the day he found out that he had cancer, that he was diagnosed with it, he was in the ground. What a shock. What a shock. But I was so glad that I had that year of mentoring being senior pastor and having him guide and give me direction. As a senior pastor, as you all know, and as pastors, there's issues in churches. There was one time in particular that I remember that there was movement going on in the church, and I was trying to pull the church together, and it was just things were coming. I won't go into the details, but I was horribly, horribly discouraged, to say the least. I had an office that I had fixed up above, on the second floor, above in our shop, but I didn't use it. One Saturday, I went up there. I was so horribly discouraged. Not that I was like, I'm just going to do something different, but my heart was absolutely hanging down on the floor, as it were. I went up to this office. I literally laid on the floor in a fetal position for several hours. I didn't want to move. I was just so content with just laying there. I did not want to move. And after several hours, I was like, you know what? Diane does not know where I'm at. And if I don't get out of here and let her know where I'm at, she won't know, because she would not know to look up there. That would not have been one place she would have looked for a long time. So after several hours, I got up and I went down the steps, through the office, and opened the door to go outside towards the house. Diane met me there. She was on the way over from the house to the shop, and she had some mail in her hand. She had no idea that I had been, what I was up to or what I was doing. God moved that she didn't even worry about me at that point, which is, I think it was a blessing. Because I would have felt bad if I'd have known that she was worried silly, trying to figure out where I was. She met me, and she said, she had the mail. She said, Jerry, here's a card. I looked at it. I looked at that card. I opened that card. And my eyes are scanning this audience to find that brother. I know you're here. Brother Randall Reedsecker sent me that card. Brother Randall Reedsecker had never sent me a card in my life. But he sent me a card of encouragement. That card came that day, at that moment, at that time, at that moment when I came out. Never have I ever received a card. Never have my faith been so hugely just increased. God was moving. God was working. For Brother Randall to send me that card. And I'm like, it's going to be okay. My heart had been hurting so bad. And this was a Saturday. And it was like, I can go on. Because God is working through my brother. Thank you, Brother Randall. I still don't see where you are. There, I'd seen it. Thank you, Brother Randall. God bless you. God moved and worked in your life in such a tremendous way in that. Looking back over the years, seeing my children grow, and again, we faced issues in church with, I won't go into details, but there were huge struggles. It's like, what are we going to do? And some of you other brothers here that are in the leadership, you know exactly what we've been dealing with trying to figure out how to resolve situations with even other leaders in congregation. And it's like, why do we go through those times? But I would want to tell you that God uses those times. God uses the good and the bad to teach us and to move. Just this past Christmas, the family was all together, my children, grandchildren, and our bedroom is just right by the dining room. I had went and laid down on the bed and actually fell asleep and woke up about 10 o'clock, and I heard voices again. And some of my children, and I think Diane might have been out there, they were out there playing a game, and they got to talking, and they got to talking about theology and how we do church and false teaching that's out there. And I listen, I'm like, they're saying what I would say. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to mess this up. So I just stayed there and listened. Then after a while, I did go out and I sat by the table and they continued on talking. But I'm like, they don't need me to inject my opinion into this. But God uses our experience, those hard times that we went through, my children seen that, they seen that hurt, they seen that awful pain. And it made them strong. I praise God for that. Things I have learned, observed, and continue to learn. Trust and honesty are huge. We sin, we repent, God forgives, and people forgive, usually. Trust takes years to build. Years to build. And it takes moments to destroy it. We repent and we forgive. But trust and confidence take years or a lifetime or maybe never in a lifetime to be totally restored like it was. This does not mean that people will not ever trust you, but it might never be the same again. Trust, I want to tell you, is a valuable, valuable asset. Treat it with utmost care, each one of you. It is important for us to start well, very important, but much more important, it is important for us to finish well. Seven things I have learned in my 60 years. Number one, I can't be good at everything. I can't be good at everything. I also cannot be all things to all people. I need to recognize the things that I'm good at and practice those things. I need to recognize the things that I'm not good at and be okay with that and even to allow others to flourish and excel in those things that I'm not good at and to bless them. I need to recognize the things that I really enjoy to do. Those things that I would do even for free if I'd have to. Those things that I would rather do than even eat. Because every one of us, we have those things that we love to do. And there's things sometimes we have to do that we don't love to do, but it needs to be done. But the more that we can look at the things that we enjoy doing and work in that arena, we will be way more effective as a person by functioning in our particular gifting. Another big one for me was for me to give advice to someone that didn't ask is almost worthless, or maybe worse than worthless. I always had the idea that if I could talk to you and give you advice and I could present truth to you and I could see you watching, that once I present truth to you, you would have to go, ah. Preachers, you know that doesn't happen that way 99% of the time. So sometimes the advice that I give is worse than if I wouldn't say anything. But just to live your life, be faithful, be a friend, and be there. Five words that I learned from a builder that we've done work for 30 years, who today is a believer who back at that point wasn't. Five words. What would you think are five words that would be a life motto to live by? He came to me and he said, Jerry, there's a couple things on the Smith job that need this and this and this and a couple this and a couple adjustments on this. I'm like, okay, no. Yeah, we'll take care of it, no problem. He said, thanks. He turned around and walked away, went about five steps, stopped, turned around, come back to me. This man said, five words. He said, what is it about you? What is it about you? I was like, what do you mean? He said, well, every time I come to you and there's a problem, a situation, he said, you always say that you will take care of it and you do it with a smile on your face and you go ahead and take care of it. I said, well, number one, it's not always that way. I'm not always this perfect guy you're projecting. But I said, number two, and this is important here. I said, number two, I said, I'm a Christian. I am a believer in Jesus. And he said this, I know that, but everybody's a Christian, as we hear so often, right? It's like, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus. But how does my life flesh out in shoe leather? How do I allow God to work in and through me? Hebrews 11:32 says, what more shall I say? Time would fail me to tell of Elvin and Tommy and Kevin and David and Alan and Todd and Floyd and Kevin and Mark and Clyde and Mel and Mike. There are so many of you that I look and I'm like, I want to talk about you because you have impacted my life. You are heroes of faith to me in the way you have been example to me. But my goal, my prayer in my life is 2 Timothy 4:6, the last part and through verse 8. The time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but to also to all of those who have loved his appearing. I have recognized that the time of my departure is at hand, brothers and sisters. I am 60 years old, and biblically, I've got 10 more years. And anything over that is bonus, and I'm not even guaranteed 10 years. Life is fleeting. What am I going to do with it? But I've fought the good fight. I have kept the faith, and I have finished the race. Finally, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord himself will give to me on that day. Brothers and sisters, I want to live my life for that day. God bless you. Thank you for listening.